think there's almost a theme that we find in some of the Yom Tovim, that almost the more complicated day itself, the more complicated Erev Yontif there is. Some of the Yom Tovim are pretty straightforward, pretty simple. And I'll give you an example. Shavuos, not such a complicated Yom Tovim. Shavuos, not something mitzvah yom. Erev Shavuos is pretty straightforward. But the Yom Tovim that are so complicated, so many different halachas and machshavas and hashkafas to them. So the Erev Yontif, you need a lot of extra special achana. I think the 2 days that come to mind are Erev Pesach and Erev Yom Kippur, two of the most complicated days, halachic days of the year. Pesach is a complicated Yom Tov, Yom Kippur is a complicated Yom Tov. Each one has with it a lot of preparations. I thought we'd just take a little bit of time talking tonight about some of the halachas and minhagim that govern Erev Yom Kippur. We'll try to highlight a little bit some of the regular halachas and minhagim and some of the modifications that many of us have to make due to some of the complications of this year. This is unfortunately been a common theme in the last couple of Yom Tovim kinds of shiurim, that we try to speak in general terms and we try to speak a little bit of the specifics of this year's somewhat difficulties. So we speak about the day of Erev Yom Kippur. So it's interesting that Chazal tell us that Erev Yom Kippur is referred to in the Chumash as the phrase B'tisha L'chodesh, which of course it is B'tisha L'chodesh. But the fact that the Torah goes out of its way to discuss Erev Yom Kippur almost like a separate entity, the Torah says B'tisha L'chodesh B'Erev, that teaches us that there are at least two important aspects of Hilchos Erev Yom Kippur. Kippur is the mitzvah suda, the mitzvah chilushti on Erev Yom Kippur. So here, Chazal of Edrashim, Maseches Rosh Hashanah, of Tesla and Aleph, that from the fact that the Torah speaks about B'tisha L'chodesh B'Erev, that we, quote-unquote, fast on the 9th of Tishrei. It's not true, we fast on the 10th of Tishrei. But Tisha L'chodesh comes to teach us that the opposite is true. We prepare for the fast on the 9th of Tishrei. We eat on the 9th of Tishrei. And the eating on Erev Yom Kippur is considered to be a mitzvah. It's considered to be a mitzvah, according to many. It's mamash a mitzvah in HaTorah, to be marve v'suda, to have a big meal, to eat as much, to eat and drink extra on Erev Yom Kippur. There is a big question conceptually what this mitzvah is all about. What is the goal of this mitzvah? The Lomdash question is this mitzvah almost an independent mitzvah? There's a mitzvah to observe Yom Kippur, and then there's an independent mitzvah to observe Erev Yom Kippur. What do I say? No, that the mitzvah of observing Erev Yom Kippur, the mitzvah of being ma'abe b'se'uda on Erev Yom Kippur, is simply as a hachonah for Yom Kippur. The Torah wants us to get ready for Yom Kippur. The Torah wants us to be able to eat fast properly in Yom Kippur. So the Torah gives us a special mitzvah sechila on Erev Yom Kippur. So is this mitzvah separate and distinct? Or is this mitzvah part of the general Yom Kippur experience? My nafkamina, big nafkamina. What if I'm not going to fast on Yom Kippur? A person knows in advance. They know they're a chola. They're a person who's ill, chola sheyesh b'sakona. So they're in fact not supposed to, not allowed to fast on Yom Kippur. Would such a person be obligated, if able to do so, to have a mitzvah suud on Erev Yom Kippur? So if you understand that the mitzvah of eating on Erev Yom Kippur is an independent mitzvah, just because a person is exempt from one mitzvah doesn't mean exempt from the other. Let's say l'moshel, if a person has to do malach on Shabbos because they're chol, it doesn't mean that they're not having kiddush. So they're able to hear kiddush, they should get kiddush. Just because a person can't fulfill the mitzvah of fasting on Yom Kippur doesn't mean they're exempt from eating on Erev Yom Kippur. But if you understand that the mitzvah of eating on Yom Kippur is not really a mitzvah in and of itself, it's part of a greater goal of achronos, a preparation for Yom Kippur. If that's the take of the mitzvah, then obviously if a person is not going to be eating, not going to be fasting on Yom Kippur, so one, what would they bother for Yom Kippur on Erev Yom Kippur? There is another basic question that the Poskim debate concerning this mitzvah, is when exactly is this not the mitzvah? When are you supposed to fulfill this mitzvah? And we know that in Halacha, so the night always follows the day. The Kedusha Sayom Yom Kippur is identical at night as well as the day. Sayom Shabbos is identical Friday night and Shabbos by day. But what about the mitzvah of Erev Yom Kippur? Should we say that the mitzvah applies for the 24-hour period of Erev Yom Kippur? Or should I say no? But it's limited only to the daylight hours, only to those hours, those couple of hours leading up to Yom Kippur itself, namely the daytime of Yom Kippur. So this is the machlekes of Poskim. So it's interesting because this machlekes probably carries over to another machlekes, to a machlekes in Minhagim about how we should approach slichos during the day of Yom Kippur. If you think about it, so the days that are the most apropos for davening, those are the days that we say the longest slichos. Rosh Hashanah, we say very, very long slichos. Tzom Gedaliah is the Yom time of the extra long slichos. The Seder Simchat Teshuvah, the slichos are long, and then a couple of days before Rosh Hashanah, the slichos are fairly short. So obviously, as you grow in momentum, you gain in terms of significance of time, so then we're going to up the ante in terms of the amount of slichos. So So if you'd ask me, I would say Erev Yom Kippur is the time to really, really go for the most. You should be davening 3 hours a day, almost since Erev Yom Kippur. And yet, probably most of us are familiar with the fact that in our community, so the exact opposite is true, that we actually daven the shortest amount of slichas on Erev Yom Kippur, which is very startling. So a suggestion is made why that's so is based on the following, that we generally don't say slichos on days of great tzibchos and Shabbos. We don't say slichos on Shabbos. So we don't say slichos on a day which is a happy day. We say slichos on days which warrant those kinds of davenings. So Erev Yom Kippur is in a certain sense a happy day. It's a zman simcha. It is a mitzvah suda, a mitzvah achilo shtia. So that's halachically a joyous occasion. If it's a joyous occasion, it really wouldn't make sense to say full slichos. So the problem is that in the olden days, the slichos were said at night. They weren't said in the daytime. They were said literally very, very late at night, very, very end of the night. It's called Beshmas HaBokir. Many people still have that practice today to try to say slichos. That's a lechet chila time to say slichos. At the very, very end of the halachic night, or whatever precise halachic night means. So since the slichos are generally originally associated with the nighttime, would it be appropriate to say long slichos? So many had the custom not to, because it's a zman simcha. However, there were some communities, the Ramah makes reference to these communities, this is the meaning in the Broyes community, the Yekeshi community, so they have the practice to say actually very, very long slichos, as long as ever Shoshana practically. So there seem to be of the opinion that saying slichos is not a contradiction to the Simchas Hayom, because the Simchas Hayom doesn't begin until the daytime. So if you go with that approach, that the Simchas Hayom only begins the night before. So this theoretical question, whether there's a mitzvah simcha night, not a mitzvah simcha night, can make a difference of an hour and a half in terms of davening on Erev Yom Kippur morning. So most of our shuls follow the approach that there are very, very short slichas actually set on Erev Yom Kippur for that very reason. There are other practices that we have that are associated with Erev Yom Kippur. One of the most famous practices of Erev Yom Kippur is a custom that appears already way, way back in the days of the Gaonim. That is the practice of going to the mikvah, the men to go to the mikvah on Erev Yom Kippur. The truth is that custom appears both for Erev Hashanah as well as for Erev Yom Kippur, but in terms of hierarchy, Erev Yom Kippur seems to be significantly more important. Erev Hashanah appears in the Ramah, so it's again also a fairly old custom, but Erev Yom Kippur really goes all the way back. We know for a fact it goes back at least to the time of the Gaonim, if not earlier. The Gaonim speak about this practice of going to the mikvah on Erev Yom Kippur. What's unclear is where does this come from? What are we trying to accomplish? What are we trying to do? Why are we going to make an Erev Yom Kippur? So there are many, many different understandings as to why this is so. So one approach actually links this to a pasuk in Chumash, "Lifnei Hashem Titaru," that is supposed to be metar yourself before you come to Hashem, before you begin Yom Kippur, you're supposed to purify yourself. So purifying yourself means going to the mikvah. So probably most of the pasuk did not accept that interpretation. Most understood the "Lifnei Hashem Titaru" does not refer to a halachic immersion in a mikvah. That l'fnei Hashem Titaru means like tara from Averis, means to be chayz b'tshuva. Some Mishnayim say there's a special mitzvah of tshuva right before Yom Kippur starts. L'fnei Hashem Titaru, you have to be misvad, you have to say achetz, you have to whatever it is, you have to be misvad a little bit right before Yom Kippur starts. And others say l'fnei Hashem Titaru just means it's not a mitzvah, it's a haftocha. It means that Kodesh Baruch Hu is promising us in a sense that we're going to become Torah. L'fnei Hashem Titaru, we will become purified. So we have different interpretations of what l'fnei Hashem Titaru means. According to one possibility, maybe it's the source of this practice of going to the mikvah on Erev Yom Kippur. But it's probably not based on that. Probably the going to the mikvah on Erev Yom Kippur is probably based on a whole different story. The Gemara Maseches Brachos tells us that in the days of Ezra, beginning of Hasheni, so there was a special enactment that was made, a special takana that was made, that if a man becomes tameh, a man becomes what's called a balkeri, so he is not supposed to learn a daven and say brachos until he goes to the mikvah to purify himself. So the Gemara says that in the later generation, that takana was abolished. That a variety of reasons, the Gemara goes into the intricate reasons why they abolished that takana, and then the Rishon explained how they had the authority to abolish that takana. But the bottom line is that din doesn't apply to Zman. That's why none of us, but I would venture to say, probably most of the people on the call now are not mocked, but in this, myself included, that people don't, men don't run to the mikvah all the time. In Hasidic communities, they're very, very mocked, but in this, men go to the mikvah every day. They want to always be in the state of Tara. But again, for most of us in the non-Hasidic world, so we don't, men generally don't run to the mikvah all the time. So if that's the case, why are we running to the mikvah on Erev Yom Kippur? So many of us can say that the reason why we can't do it the rest of the year is almost like we're not up to it. We're not at that level of where we should be. But really, truly, the Amos Lamita was we really should be going. The proper thing really would have been to go to the mikvah the entire year. But never we can't. So Klal Yisrael were willing to almost accept upon themselves, one day a year, we're gonna live up to the standard that we should all year long. It's like a very similar to the custom that we have of refraining from Pas Akum, Minig Yisrael. We don't eat bread that was baked by a non-Jew, even if the bread is totally kosher. So we wouldn't partake of that bread during the Aseret Yemei Tshuva, because really we should refrain from it the entire year. That's what really should happen. Mice we can't. Not for whatever reason, the Chacham gave us a leniency. Chacham permitted us to eat the bread baked by the non-Jewish bakers. So we can't quite live up to the proper standards of the rest of the year. At least a few days a year, we should try to be a little bit more machmir. That's probably what's going on with the tefillah b'mikvah as well. So at the end of the day, there is this age-old custom that appears in the Shulchan Aruch of going to the mikvah on Erev Yom Kippur. So this minug of going to the mikvah can really be fulfilled in multiple ways. The most appropriate way would be to actually go to a mikvah proper. If a person is not able to go to a mikvah itself, so then the Gemara says, Brachas tells us that there is a substitute. Since this is only a tefillah of men, it's not tefillah for women, it's not tefillah for kohanim, it's not tefillah for geirim. The only three areas of halacha where tefillah is absolutely critical for us, b'zman hazeh, nikra din, is tefillah for nashim, for geirim, and for tefillah kohanim. So those kind of tefillahs must be done in absolutely kosher mikvah. Tefillah for men can be done in a little bit of a different standard of a mikvah. It doesn't have to be quite up to par of a regular mikvah. And number two, if one's stuck and one doesn't have any mikvah to go to, one can actually even pour water on themselves. What's called Tisha Kavan, the Gemara says, Brachas talks about, for this unique status of tefillah for men. So instead of immersing in a body of water, you can have water poured over your head, the amount of 9 kavan. So most of us never experienced 10 tes kavan, probably until this past Rosh Hashanah. The post can tell us I probably venture to say, probably most of the people on this call, myself included in this one also, did not go to the men's mikvahs. They were most of our communities actually closed the men's mikvahs for obvious safety concerns, and therefore we had to avail ourselves of the second method of becoming tahor, of pouring tisha kavan. In the old days, pouring tisha kavan meant you had to find someone to stand on and pour a couple of buckets over your head. Today, Baruch Hashem, modern plumbing has helped us a little bit. You can basically stand under the shower. So how long you can stand under the shower? So you have to make a little bit of a calculation. You have to figure out, the Mishnah Berurah gives you a number. The only problem is Mishnah Berurah speaks about the Polish quarts. I don't know enough about whether those are the same quarts or not, but people have made the numbers in liters and gallons. And bottom line, it came out to, again, somewhere roughly in the area of approximately 5 minutes or so standing under the shower. Again, I can't say it's written in stone exactly what number it was, but somewhere around that area, maybe a little bit, maybe a drop less, maybe a little more of it, but whatever you did in Erev Hashanah, it's fine. So many of them just right approximately 5 minutes standing under the shower. So that, you stand there and the water goes down your head, etc., goes down over the course of your whole body for a couple of minutes, and showing that's considered to be a shvichas tisha kavan, which I am strongly recommending everybody to do an Erev Yom Kippur as well. There is another practice that we associate with Yom Kippur, with Erev Yom Kippur.
Rebbe?
Yeah.
Is that, you have to stand under the shower, that's separate from when you're showering, right? Just stand under the water?
I mean, in theory, of actually kind of shneim, if you I don't know how long people like to stand under the shower in general, so I'll tell you the honest truth, and maybe I shouldn't say, but I found it very relaxing in Erev Hashanah, I'll tell you the truth. I felt like I knew I couldn't go anywhere for 5 minutes, so I was stuck. Very, very, I'm looking forward to the Erev Yom Kippur again.
So you could be...
I'm not looking forward to the water bills at the end of the month, but still looking forward to Shabbat. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, so there's another custom that also was associated with, it's almost, in our minds, it's associated with Yom Kippur proper, but it's really more of an Erev Yom Kippur thing. That is the recitation of Kol Nidre. So Kol Nidre also, interestingly enough, does not appear in the Gemara, obviously, but as a very, very long, rich history. It goes back quite some time. We have already Nuschos of Kol Nidre back in the days of the Gaonim. So there was some shape or form Kol Nidre was said already for well over 1,000 years. What exactly is the purpose of Kol Nidre? We know that it's a very dramatic beginning of the davening, but we're not quite sure halakhically what it's doing. So there's actually a major, major dispute between the view of the Gaonim and against Rabbeinu Tam as to what are we trying to accomplish with our with the recitation of Kol Nidre, putting aside the Nigin and the Chazan and all the sideshows. But what are we trying to do? So the Gaonim said, what we're trying to do is Hataras Nadar. We know there's a din that if a person takes a neder, so you go to a Beit Din, and the Beit Din is mata the neder. Now, when you do a regular Torah Sedarim, it's complicated, very complicated, because you have to come up with some kind of a reason. Can't just say, well, I took a neder, so tell me it's muta. It doesn't work like that. You have to explain, why did you take the neder? There's what's called the Pesach, what's called the Charata, and there's a whole discussion, and the person has to explain why he did or didn't think a certain way, and the Beis Din has to judge, and then they finally give the Pesach, mutlach. So it could be, say, the Gaon, that's what's going on here on Yom Kippur, on Erev Yom Kippur by Kol Nidre as well. We're afraid to enter into the Yom HaDin. We don't want to come to Yom Kippur with the Dharma on our heads. Therefore, we go out of our way to do Atar Sadam. The problem is that Atar Sadam that we do in Erev Yom Kippur, this Kol Nidre, doesn't seem to meet all the criteria of Atar Sadam. First of all, the Din is Tzach Lefardes and Nether. You have to explain what the Nether was. You can't just walk to a Beis Din and say, I don't want to tell you what the Nether was. You know, be Mater. You have to explain it. The Beis Din asks the question you and why'd you take it? Is it a good Atar? Not a good Atar. By Erev Yom Kippur, it's a big joke. We just come in Erev Yom Kippur, we say Kol Nidre, we start everything. That's not exactly how Atar Sadam usually works. So this is a big problem. So the Gaonim explained that the Ika Mikra Dim in a Torah at least, so probably Atar Sadam would work this way, and it's Erev Yom Kippur, and therefore everyone's only doing it al-das, that's being done properly. We have a different cheshbonos that are given to try to explain what the lumdish background of Kol Nidre is all about. It's basically Atar Sadam. But Ben Atam was so convinced that the problems against assuming that the Atar Sadam was so insurmountable, Ben Atam had a different take on what Kol Nidre is. Ben Atam said Kol Nidre is not a Atar Sadam of the past, it's rather a mysterious Madaw for the future. It is a statement of the future that we're Mavatam, we can't lahab any Adar we're going to take. And that actually has its roots in the Gemara. The Gemara says in the Sechta Adar, the third parak, that a person can make a Madaw, can make a statement, hereby invalidating any Adar that it takes in the future. Now, truth to be told, there are different shitas about how that works. Does it always work? The limitations of that. Not so pashut. Basically, what old Klaisel is doing when they do Kol Nidre. So, if you even take a look in the Machs when you get home, what is home now? But when you get, after the Shia, so you take a look at the Machs, you'll see that there are different Matsurim have different texts of Kol Nidre. That most of us say the text of Kol Nidre, Yom Kippurim Zeh Ad Yom Kippurim Haba. So, if that's the text of Kol Nidre, Yom Kippurim Zeh Ad Yom Kippurim Haba, that is very, very much in sync, very much in line with Rabbeinu Tam. So there was an old text of Kol Nidre that Yom Kippurim She'ovar Ad Yom Kippurim Zeh. So that's obviously a throwback to the days of the Gaonim. There are some who have amended the text and combined the two together. Yom Kippurim She'ovar Ad Yom Kippurim Zeh Ad Yom Kippurim Haba.
Hello.
Everybody's happy.
Hi, Ati. Very good.
So there are different customs as to what exactly the Nesuch is. And again, the different customs are a reflection of the different lomdas as to what we're trying to accomplish. This could potentially have impact on the timing of Kol Nidre. Is it necessary, absolutely critical to say Kol Nidre before Shkia, before Yom Kippur technically begins? So if you hold that it's Atar Sadarim, then the answer may be yes, because Atar Sadarim is not really supposed to be done on Shabbos and Yom Tov, unless it's a very, very big Tzarech HaYom. Say a person took a neder, he's not going to drink wine, and now he realizes he wants to make Kiddush, then he can be Matan Neder and Shabbos. But it's not really Tzarech HaYom, you're not supposed to be Matan Adarim and Shabbos and Yom Tov, or Yom Kippur for that matter. So if you hold that it's Atar Sadarim, so then you have to... If you hold that it's Atar Sadarim, so then it would presumably have to be done before Shkia. If you hold that it's a mysterious Madaw for the future, so it would be hard to understand why you have to do it before Shkia. We have a custom, interestingly enough, to try to rush up Kol Nidre before Shkia. We try very hard to say Kol Nidre Dafke before the sun sets because of that concern. Even though it's strange, we don't really hold it as Atar Sadarim. Most of us, and in our show, we don't say Miyom Kibum Sha'avar. So we're treating it like a Madaw, and we're still rushing up. The post came right because it doesn't look right to do it on Shabbos, on Yom Kippur. It's not nice to do Atar Sadarim. It's not nice to do a Mesiris Madar. It's pastish. It looks a little bit too close to Atar Sadarim. So therefore, we have a custom to rush it up. But the Ikka Mikra Din, it probably wouldn't be necessary to rush it up. There was an interesting shah that was, yes, again, I don't know whether it's relevant for any of the shuls in our neighborhood, but I know there were some shuls that were having the possibility of they didn't have enough space for everybody on the daven safe in Yom Kippur, we were going to make two minyanim. So we're going to stagger the minyanim a little bit. So staggering, obviously, the daytime presents its own challenges, but staggering at night is also a certain degree of challenges. So let's say, for argument's sake, you start the first minute at 6:30, and let's even if you rush things, let's say 8:30, 9, whatever it takes the daven, Then you bring the second group in to start davening, you know, a Ma'ariv at 9 o'clock. You're not Ma'ariv at 9 o'clock, that's not a problem, but it's a little muddler to start with Kol Nidre. 9 o'clock, it's been dark already for 3 hours, you can start Kol Nidre, you know. So Me'ikra Din, it's not such a problem. Me'ikra Din, according to Rabbeinu Tam, it's not such a big deal to do a Taras Tadarim 3 hours after it gets dark. It's not really such a problem. It doesn't sit right. It's like a motion that doesn't sit right. Kol Nidre is like, you know, as the sun's setting, that's when you're saying Kol Nidre. So the question was raised, would it be better to say Kol Nidre, like maybe Yod Yom, let's say the 9 o'clock Hevra, tell him to come at 5:30 for Kol Nidre. We'll just say, we won't be Mekabel, we won't say Shechar, we won't be Mekabel the Yom. We'll just say Kol Nidre, and then send everybody home and come back 3 hours later. I thought emotionally that may be even more difficult. I said psychologically, imagine you get all reared up for Kol Nidre, and your mom's ready to go, and then the rabbi's okay, everyone drive home, and then come back in 3 hours from Ireland. It doesn't exactly sit right. It's like reminds me a little bit of we spoke about this in the past. That was almost like it's by Ela. Are you supposed to duchen by Ela now? Because we say in Ela, we end up getting duchen. It's way after dark. You're not really supposed to duchen after dark. So there are different customs about this. So supposedly the story goes, I don't know whether it's true or not. Supposedly the story goes that when Rav Shmuel Hirsch came to Frankfurt, they was davening Ela very late, and he wanted to be able to duchen. So he said that what he'll do is they should stand Ela earlier, and he'll give his drasha after the Ela is over, before they blow shofar. It's just a legend. I don't know whether it's true or not. I asked one of the senior members in Broyes a couple of years ago. They told me that they never heard the story. I'm sure it's been true. But the way the legend goes is that he tried it once, and instead it was a flop. Because I can give you an Ela drasha after an Ela. You give an Ela drasha, and then what are you going to do? You're going to make Abdullah afterwards. Again, the whole point of Ela drasha is getting into Ela. It's not Chalab Afreya. So sometimes, you know, emotionally, you have to, there's no halach when to give Ela drasha, but emotionally, you have to figure out what has to, the certain Seyed HaDvarim in terms of Yom Kippur, so it's important to keep that Seyed HaDvarim as best as logistically. I don't know, I don't think it's so terrible to say Kol Nidre at 9 o'clock at night. I don't think that's the end of the world. So again, since we followed the view of Rabbeinu Tam, it's not really such a time. There is another very important mitzvah on Erev Yom Kippur, which may be, in a certain sense, the most important of all of these. Well, there are a few very important ones, but there's a din that a person is supposed to be mefayis his chaver b'Erev Yom Kippur. That a person is supposed to make amends and make shalom and try to apologize and to make up on Erev Yom Kippur with one another. To be mechaper things, but on the chaver, the Gemara, and the Mishnah, the Enema says Yuma speaks in very strong terms. If a person doesn't clear the air in terms of ben adam lechaveru, so he's going to have a very hard time on Yom Kippur because of Hashem Titaru. Yom Kippur is only mechaper for the averus ben adam lemakom, not ben adam lechaveru. It's critical that a person is mefayis his chaveru the erev Yom Kippurim. The Gemara tells many stories in the Enema says Yuma about different amaroim where different, you know, issues came up with different people, and everyone tried very hard to try to mefayis one another on Erev Yom Kippur. There's another din that appears in Erev Yom Kippur, that's the mitzvah of Tesefes. He's supposed to start Yom Kippur a little bit early. When the rises from Sukkim, the Gemara Maseches Roshan and Daftes, there's a mitzvah to begin Yom Kippur Mibeod Yom. What does that mean, to begin Mibeod Yom? To do what Mibeod Yom exactly? So that's also a further question. So the Rambam had a unique understanding. The Rambam says that when we say it's supposed to be Mekabel Yom Kippur Mibeod Yom, that means Lagabi the Inui. Means you have to refrain from eating or wearing shoes. Anything that's related to the afflictions of Yom Kippur has to start maybe on Yom. But anything related to Malacha, you can do Malacha until the buzz, until the last day. You can't do Malacha Shkia, but until Shkia, until sunset, you can still do Malacha according to the Rambam. And many Rishayim disagree with it. Many Rishayim say, no, it's not true. How can you split the day? So if you're not allowed to eat, not allowed to wear shoes, then you wouldn't be permitted to do Malacha either. So, again, those are two different approaches as to what exactly is supposed to be accomplished and what exactly is the goal when it comes to Tosefes in terms of the beginning of Yom Kippur. There is a din that once a person is Mekabel Yom Kippur, So whether you chose to make a Tosefes of 1 minute, 5 minutes, 1 minute, or an hour, once you're Mekabel Yom Kippur, then you can't do Malach anymore. Now we find this is true by Shabbos as well. Now let's say if a person davens in early minyan, so they make Shabbos early. Now they come home, they realize, oh wait, I forgot to put the children in the fire or something, so you can't do that. So once you're Mekabel Shabbos, then you're not allowed to do any malachi after that point. What's considered to be a Kabbalah Shabbos? Kabbalah Shabbos is either the same as Mashiach, or maybe it's Lachadodi, or Tavi Meir. There are different nuances. So what's Kabbalah Shabbos? What's the Kabbalah Yom Kippurim? So different people have different things. So some people say Tefillah Zachas. Tefillah Zachas is that long, long tefillah that appears in the Mazorim that's recited right before Kol Nidre, right? So those who say it, so that has in it the text of Kabbalah Sayom. So once a person would complete the Tefillah Zachas, would say this phrase, Yom Kippur Sayom, then the day of Yom Kippur has begun. If a person is not saying the Tefillah Zachas, so they should try a little bit before Shkia to make some kind of a formal Kabbalah Sayom. They should say, Makabal Bishayom, they should fulfill the mitzvah of Tosefes Yonder properly. But the one thing that's the end game. After that point, so there's nothing else to talk about, that's the Bracha Shechiyanu. The Gemara has it, but says Erev, it was just in Daf Yomi a couple of days ago. The Gemara has a suffix whether you're supposed to say Shechiyanu and Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. The Gemara has a suffix because on the one hand, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur are annual occurrences. On the other hand, they're not really Regal, they're not Mawadim in the full sense of the word. The days of Kedusha, they're Yom Tovim, but they're a little bit less, and less, they're a little different than the Shalosh Regalim. The Gemara in Erevin is not sure whether those days Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur warrant the Shechiyanu. At the end, the Gemara concludes that it does. At the end, we say Shechiyanu and Rosh Hashanah, and we say Shechiyanu and Hashem this coming Sunday night for Yom Kippur as well. So we will say Shechiyanu. It's actually the Shechiyanu that we say in Yom Kippur is different from all the other Shechiyanus of the rest of the year, because it doesn't have a coast to it. We always say Shechiyanu or the Kosher Yayin. We always try to say Shechiyanu as part of Kiddush, but that can be kind of hard to do on Yom Kippur. Although the Gemara does try to bend over backwards, almost do acrobatic feats to try to figure out how could we possibly make Shechiyanu or the Kosher Yayin. Maybe we can, and maybe we'll give it to the kid to drink. And the Gemara says it's Be'er Chinuch, the kid's going to get you supposed to drink on Yom Kippur. So at the end of the day, we don't. At the end of the day, we don't use a Kosher Yayin, but theoretically we should. But once you say Shechiyanu, then the game is over. Then you can't back out anymore. So there is a Mechlekes and Rishayim, whenever you Makabal Shabbos, let's say a woman bench is left. So we assume that lighting candles for a woman is considered to be Kabbalah Shabbos. Whatever the woman makes it tonight, she makes a condition that she's not makabel upon herself Shabbos. She wants to still drive to shul. She's going to a simcha that night, whatever. She wants to have to drive after Benji left. So some Rishonim say that's legitimate, and others say that's not appropriate. So I'm thinking as we permit that b'shas adchak. It's a very difficult situation, then we would permit such a thing. Under normal circumstances, we'd recommend the women not to do this. So the women shouldn't take advantage of that and use it for things that are not so critical. Probably the one time a year the women use it the most is Kol Nidre, because most married women don't go to shul Friday night, but everyone goes to shul Yom Kippur night. So if, let's say a woman lives far away from the shul, so she wants to bench a lot before she leaves, and then she wants to be able to drive to shul. So she would have to make it tonight, she would have to make a condition. So here the post can point out, you can only make a condition because man, you haven't said Shechiyanu. If the woman benches left and says Shechiyanu when she benches left, then the game's over. And you can't make a condition, you can't make it tonight, once you already said Shechiyanu is an absolute objective, Kabbalah Sayyam. So then the women should be instructed, if they're planning on driving because they live far from the shul, then they should dafka not make Shechiyanu that when they light candles. They should say Shechiyanu in shul when everyone else does, like the Chazan says it together with the whole tzibur right after Kol Nidre. If a woman is benching lech, so let us say it, and she benches lech, then she should not say it a second time. A lot of people get confused. They think that saying Shechiyanu with the chazan is like kind of like the end of Kol Nidre, like part of the davening. It's only part of the davening if you haven't said Shechiyanu yet. If you're a man or you're a woman who hasn't said Shechiyanu yet, then you say Shechiyanu at that point. But if you're somebody who did say Shechiyanu yet, it's one Shechiyanu per person, per customer, per yontif. You're only not saying two Shechiyanus for the same Kedushas Hayom. So the women have to be especially careful about this to make that judgment. If they're not driving, they're not doing anything, they want to bench left and say Shechiyanu Makabel Yom Tov, right? That's the optimal way to do it. If that's not an option, so then they can, so then if they're forced to have to drive, you have to bench left, that's okay. And then they should hold off with the Shechiyanu until later. Even the entire lighting candles in Erev Yom Kippur is a little bit of a shaky thing. The Mishnah says it's really a minig, it's not a real din. A lot of people think that lighting candles Yom Kippur, that's like the highlight of all the halakhos neiros of the year. So it's strange. That's probably the least important halakhos neiros of the entire year. And on Erev Shabbos, that's a real din. Erev Yom, that's a real din. Erev Yom Kippur's lighting, the Gemara says, is a minute. I'm not saying not to do it. And we make a bracha on it. So the women should definitely be benching left. But the Mishnah says it's a minute. So again, it's a minute that we fulfill, but it's only a terrorist minute. It's not the same. We're not having a suit of Shabbos, not a suit of Yom Tov, so the real einig doesn't apply. So the actual halacha wouldn't apply. But again, the minhag Yisrael is I think a universal minhag that the women do bench lach on Erev Yom Kippur. So again, we didn't get a chance of touching every single thing of Erev Yom Kippur, but we got a little bit of highlights, some of the things that touch on in terms of the halachas proper. You have a couple of shinuyim in terms of the tefillah on Erev Yom Kippur. Also, a few things that in Shacharis there are a couple of things that are missing. Obviously, Tachanun is missing, but that's not a great surprise. Tachanun gets lost for less significant things than Erev Yom Kippur. Since Erev Yom Kippur is a shtetl yom, it's not a chil shtiyah, we're not going to say Tachanun. But we even leave out the other things. We leave out the lametzach. We don't see anything that would be associated with a real bona fide yontif. So Erev Yom Kippur is on par with Rosh Chodesh, Chol Hamoed, Purim, Chanukah, the real Mekoi. There are two different gradations of Yom Tov. You have like the lower level Yom Tov, like a Tu B'Shvat, like a Omer, those kinds of things that we are mitachnun, but we do say Elam Netzach. Then you have the biggies, the Rosh Chodesh, Chanukah, Purim, or Pesach, Erev Yom Kippur, those kind of days that everything gets bumped out. The other thing that also gets omitted on Erev Yom Kippur for a totally different reason, that's Mizmor L'Seuda. But that's not because of it's a Yom Tov, that's because you can't bring a Korban Toda on Erev Yom Kippur. The Gemara says that a Korban Toda has so much Korbanos to it, so many lechems and matzahs and chametz that have to grow together with it, it's going to be impossible to eat everything. And they're going to end up having to burn all the nice or the leftover Korbanos. So therefore, those days of the year, when it's not enough time to eat it, so you shouldn't bring it. So Erev Yom Kippur, you only have a few hours to eat, and it's going to be dark, and then you're cutting down this manachil in half. So therefore, it's better not to bring a Korban Toda than Erev Yom Kippur. And Erev Pesach for the same reason, because so much of the Korban Toda is chametz, and you're going to bring it Erev Pesach in the morning, you have to finish it all in a few hours. So because the Korban Toda, that special Thanksgiving offering, that special Korban Toda was not bought, it's not a mikdash on Erev Yom Kippur, that's why in our Nischa Tefillah, that's why Mizmor Seuda gets admitted as well. Mincha on Erev Yom Kippur is obviously very, very different from a regular mincha, in that we get the entire achet, the whole Seder HaAvidah gets put into Mincha. And there's a unique reason for that is because we really should be saying Vidur and Yom Kippur. We're saying Vidur and Erev Yom Kippur before. So the Gemara says that we're afraid, yeah, the person made it so far along the way, and it's holding Erev Yom Kippur, and then he'll he'll end up in a situation where he can't say Vidur. So Nebuch, the guy's going to leave this world. Now Vidur, Gefirlich. So let him just make sure he chaps around a vidah. Make sure he gets a vidah in. Nothing goes wrong at the sort of setas chas v'shalom. So at least he knows he's got one gishmach a good vidah before Yom Kippur starts. So nice. That's what we do. So that's what the Gemara says. That's what we do. That's what our practice is. That we recite the full fledged vidah with yachet, shamos, etc. The first of the many times around Yom Kippur that begins actually with Erev Yom Kippur. So again, Erev Yom Kippur has its halachas that it governs. It has its minhagim. It has its mischos tefillah. A lot of different things that revolve around this very, very special day. The Erev, so because Yom Kippur is a special day, the Erev, the Achronos are so special. Okay? Wish everybody a Gemara Chesim Tova. Wish you a good, healthy, and happy year. Wish you only have a service.